the bell, Sokka. Ring the bell, Sokka. Ring the bell, Sokka. Ring the bell, Sokka. This is Movie Fighters, the show where I'm Matt Wilson and Chris Sims. We watch movies and beat them up. Chris, it's Christmas.
Yes, Matt. It's Christmas.
Ring that bell.
It's that Christmas season. Ring those bells. Ring those church bells in town. They're ringing the song that we can't play anymore, unfortunately. But yes, Matt, it's Christmas, and that means it's time for us to watch our annual Christmas movie.
That's right. It's time for us to dive into one of the weirder films in the Christmas canon.
Now, can we go through our history real quick, Matt?
I would love if we did.
At the holiday season, we like to watch holiday movies. So we've watched Santa Claus the Movie, which is trash.
Okay, we have two from our old band camp days.
Okay.
Santa Claus the Movie is one of them.
Trash.
There's also Santa's Sleigh.
Surprisingly good.
Good. Good is a strong word.
Watchable.
Surprisingly.
We were both really surprised at how much fun we ended up having with that movie.
Yeah, it's also trash, but like watchable trash. Santa's Sleigh is definitely a movie in which Bill Goldberg, who plays Santa Claus, wears an iron cross.
Yes. Yes, he does.
For better or worse. We've watched two Christmas films starring The Miz.
We have. We watched The Christmas Bounty, and we watched... It's not Santa with Muscles. It's something with... It's very... Because he's Mikey Muscles in The Christmas Bounty.
Yes. He's not the star of The Christmas Bounty.
No.
Like he is the star of Santa's Little Helper? That's what that movie's called.
Santa's Little Helper. That's the one. That's the one. Those were bad, and I'm kind of sad that Miz had to go back and like do some really good work as a pro wrestler, so that we didn't get like a Christmas movie from the Miz every year.
Yeah, now he's moved on to Marine films, so
we're eventually going to have to watch those. I hope you realize that.
I mean, I can't wait to see Summer Rae's bravura performance in the Marine 4.
Here's the question: do we start? And this is something maybe our listeners can decide. Do we start with John Cena as the Marine and then move on? Or do we watch them in reverse chronological order, starting with the Marine 5?
I mean, we got to get all that Marine continuity. I think we got to start at the beginning. When we get to the Randy Orton movie, that's going to be a real slog.
It's going to be a real rough one, I predict.
All right. So what other Christmas movies have we watched? We watched The Christmas Ghost.
Yeah, a weird little we watched a couple weird little Christmas rom-coms,
mm-hmm.
or not even rom-coms, just roms, Rom Space Nights. They were not good.
A Christmas Ghost had a little bit of calm, but also had a little bit of drum.
It was more of a rom drum, I would say.
It was somewhat a rom drum. What was the other one we watched?
No idea. Zero memory of it.
Well. We're taking a little swerve this time out. We're not watching a Lifetime movie. We're not watching a movie with a wrestler in it. We are instead watching something that we both found very baffling when it was brought to our attention, and many people brought it to our attention as something that we should watch. It is a movie that was – oh, we forgot the fucking Kirk Cameron movie.
Oh, yeah, the best episode of Movie Fighters, Saving Christmas,
yeah,
starring Kirk Cameron.
I can't believe we forgot that.
Who's going to tell you all about why those presents under the tree are a New Jerusalem.
What a smug motherfucker that is. God damn
people
it.
People always tell me they go back and listen to the War Rocket Ajax Worst Christmas Mixtape Ever episode that we did with Fraction and Maggie Sirota, which is – like I am very proud of that one. I think – Saving Christmas is maybe the worst Christmas themed or the best Christmas themed anything that we've ever done.
Best slash worst.
We lose it.
We do. We absolutely lose our beans on that one.
We lost our beans, Matt.
So the movie we're watching this time out is Pottersville, which came out this year. It was released on Netflix the day that we're recording this, December 15th.
It is Hot and Fresh Out the Kitchen.
Hot and Fresh Out the Kitchen on Netflix. This movie, like everything you learn about it, makes it more baffling, more confusing and baffling.
Yeah, it absolutely sounds like an Uwe Boll style tax dodge, right? For everyone involved.
Very much so. Even with Uwe Boll, like certainly with Uwe Boll movies, you look at the cast list and you're like, they're in this? They're in this? Like where you're surprised by who is actually participating, actually starring in the movie. Mm-hmm. I would say Pottersville is far more surprising in terms of the cast than even an Uwe Boll movie. Mm-hmm. Because every actor is great.
Yeah. That is absolutely true. Who's in the lead role? Is it Michael Shannon?
Michael Shannon is in the lead role.
We've got Christina Hendricks.
She's playing his wife.
He's playing his wife, who there's going to be a twist in that relationship, everybody.
Judy Greer, who is like one of the best of all time.
Yes.
You may remember her from Arrested Development, among other things. Judy Greer is in this movie. Ron Perlman's in this movie. Yeah. Thomas Lennon is in this movie.
Hellboy is in this movie. Hellboy and members of the state.
Here's the one that gets me. Ian McShane. Fucking Al Swearengin.
Yeah. He's in the house for Pottersville.
He's in this.
Now, I should say, one of the reasons we chose this movie was because there was a widely circulated review of it that if you Google Pottersville, it's literally the second thing to come up. It is an IndieWire article that's just called one of the worst Christmas movies ever made. It intrigued us on a level that few things do anymore.
Yes, because here's the synopsis for the film. This is the Netflix synopsis. A man's drunken romp in a gorilla suit gets him mistaken for Bigfoot, drawing media attention and tourist dollars to his struggling small town.
Mm-hmm. So is it or is it not an It's a Wonderful Life riff?
That doesn't sound like
an It's a Wonderful Life riff.
That's been my question from the beginning. What the fuck does it have to do with It's a Wonderful Life?
Because Pottersville is the name of the bad Bedford Falls.
Yes. Named for Mr. Potter.
Mr. Potter, Merry Christmas to you too, Mr. Bailey, in jail.
And a new year, Happy New Year to you in jail.
So I kind of thought this was going to be an It's a Wonderful Life situation, but now it does not seem like that is the case.
None of the promotional material pays off on the promise of the title.
Mm-hmm.
That this is somehow tied into It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, because if you make a movie called Pottersville with this cast, with Tom Lennon involved.
Set at Christmas.
Isn't like the natural, like, follow me on this one, Matt. Isn't the natural use of that title to show a reverse It's a Wonderful Life where a guy kills himself and everything's better?
I mean, that's very dark. I thought it would just be something like, there's a timeline where George Bailey never existed, and this is the 2017 of that timeline.
I mean, that would explain a lot about 2017.
No shit. George Bailey, we needed you. The description doesn't say a word about Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird. Nothing but the title says anything about It's a Wonderful Life. So what is this movie?
I'm very curious. And here's the thing. I was talking to Aiden on the way home. We just got back from Target. I'll talk about that in the snack situation segment. It's coming up. That's a little tease for everybody. About Christmas movies, right? And there's a lot of movies people watch at Christmas, but there's really very few that actually capture the spirit of Christmas in an entertaining way. Like, Christmas Vacation, I just recently watched again, and it's basically just a middle-aged cokehead businessman in the 80s nearly ruining his holiday by spending money he doesn't have and hating his family.
And just hating his family and talking shit about some poor people that he knows.
Talking shit about poor people, like just ignoring his wife, ruining his marriage. A Christmas Story is fun, but it's like, you know, very not really spirit of Christmassy. And it's like White Christmas is kind of the only one, like, where it's funny and it's fun and it's got all these different musical numbers. But at the end of the day, like, they do a nice Christmassy thing for a guy.
Yeah.
Spoiler warning for White Christmas. They do a Christmas thing for a guy.
I mean, It's a Wonderful Life doesn't all take place at Christmas, but it has the similar, like, a nice thing happens for a family at the end. The two modern
Full Street, I think, maybe
the two modern movies that I think people would put into it are Love Actually, which is about 40% good. If Love Actually was just the story about the British pop singer played by Bill Nighy and his manager.
Okay. The good Love Actually bits. Billy Mack,
yeah,
the Prime Minister, and Liam Neeson's kid. Everything else is Martin Freeman.
And Martin Freeman, yeah.
Yeah. And the guy who flies to Milwaukee for an orgy.
That part sucks. I hate that part.
Do you hate that part? I think that part's very charming.
I hate it. If you cut out the fat shaming from the guy falling in love with the Portuguese lady plot, it would be better.
I do like is it Marcus and Aurelia?
Yeah.
We're off the rails.
Yeah, but Love Actually, I don't think actually goes into it. Elf maybe does.
I want more movies added to that category of, like, genuine Christmas favorites. Like things you can sit down with and, like, and they're funny and you have a good time at the end. Not like The Star, where you laugh all the way through it, but it's because as soon as you get out of the theater, you want to call someone and talk to them about this wild movie you just watched.
Or not like The Santa Claus, which begins with the death of Santa Claus.
With the death of Santa Claus! And or like Santa Claus the Movie, which begins with the death of Santa Claus, and then is about executives.
Yeah.
Ugh. But, like, I'm feeling like maybe Pottersville isn't going to be it.
I don't think so. I do want to say, like, you might suspect that this cast is in this movie because the director is, like, somebody.
Mm-hmm.
He's not. This is his third movie.
Talk about Seth Henriksen?
Seth Henriksen. This is his third movie as a director. Mm-hmm. His only two other movies are a 1997 documentary called Goreville, USA.
Okay.
And a 2004 short called Zamboni Man. He's been a cinematographer for some other stuff, but he has basically kept up a work pace of, like, a movie every 3 years.
That's very weird.
I don't know.
All right, so here's a twist to this week's episode of Movie Fighters, everybody. I was just getting ready to record, to come in and sit down and record with you, Matt.
Right.
And Aiden, my wife, asked me, "What are you movie fighting?" And I said, "Oh, that movie Pottersville." And she was like, "Oh, I want to watch that." So for the first time ever, when we sign off to go watch this movie, I'm actually going to be watching it with my wife, who normally avoids these things as though they are the horrible movies they are.
Yeah, she may wish that she was doing that this time too.
I think even odds that she bails before it's over and I just come back into the office.
Okay, well, we shall see. But before we get into watching the movie and Aiden joining us to watch it, we've got to do the hottest segment in all of podcasting, Chris. Snack Situation.
You'll have to fight with something to eat. Sometimes it's savory, sometimes it's sweet. Snack Situation. What you snacking on?
Chris, what are you snacking on?
Well, as I previously said, Matt, I went to Target today. I'll be frank. I'll be honest with you, with our listeners. Just it's been a year. It's been a hard one. Mm-hmm. So when I see that pizza rolls are on sale, three bags for $9, three bags of pizza rolls come home with me.
Sure.
So your boy is going to be snacking on some combination pizza rolls when he gets back out of the living room.
What I have, this is a I feel it's become like it's becoming a Christmas tradition for me on Movie Fighters. It's not actually a Christmas food per se. But the wrapping always reminds me of Christmas, and it's something that we often exchange at Christmas. I'm going to be enjoying a Tunnux caramel wafer bar.
Oh, that's very Christmassy.
Yeah.
I won a $100 gift certificate at World Market in a treasure hunt. Mm-hmm. And I did not, I thought about it, but I did not actually buy any Tunnix caramel wafer biscuits.
Well, I'm going to be having one during this probably very bad movie because I want to enjoy something.
All right. That's a little depressing, but okay. Let's do this.
Let's do this. You can watch along with us on Netflix. Pottersville is on Netflix now. So we're going to hit pause here. You're going to hear a musical interlude and an ad. You can watch the movie or not, but either way, we're going to come back and talk about it. We are back from watching Pottersville, a movie that Wikipedia describes as a 2017 American comedy film. We might disagree.
Matt, I'm gonna be 1,000,000% real with both you and our listeners. Okay. And this is a shoot, and this is something you do not know. To let the listeners know what's going on with us. We took a little break after watching the movie. Like, we actually split the recording session up, which we don't usually do. Usually we come right back. It's actually been probably like four hours since we finished watching this film.
Yeah.
We took a break. We ate dinner. Spent some time with our spouses. This movie's such a big fucking pile of nothing that slides right off your brain because it's boring and bad and poorly made in every respect. Do you know where I was when you texted me and told me, hey, I'm ready to finish up the show now? I was in bed. I had just finished brushing my teeth. I was getting in bed and checked my phone. And I was like, oh shit, I thought I had to do something tonight. And it's Movie Fighters. Literally, I'm wearing pajamas right now. I had to put a shirt on to come into the office and talk to you.
I feel like there's no more appropriate way to describe this movie than it sent you to bed.
Here's the thing. This movie's bad. Okay, this movie is phenomenally bad. But it's not the kind of bad that is in any way interesting or is in any way enjoyable to watch. Like, don't see this movie, don't think about this movie at all. It's nothing. It's weirdly nothing.
So there are two big questions we asked each other throughout our viewing of this movie. Mm-hmm. They came up several times.
Yes.
Number one was, is this supposed to be a comedy? Because
it is.
There are not a lot of very apparent jokes. Certainly not in like the first 20 minutes.
Things happen that are definitely supposed to be funny, but that are not there are no jokes. There's just like odd situations.
Yeah, it's like at best situational humor. But the other thing is, like, most of the actors are not playing it for laughs. The only, like, everybody's certainly Michael Shannon is playing this like a serious drama.
Well, does he have any choice in the matter? I'm not that familiar with Michael Shannon. I will cop to that. I really only know him as General Zod, which makes sense to me because he does look at all times like he's maybe 2 seconds away from saying, and now the son of Jor-El will feel my wrath, no matter what's going on around him.
Michael Shannon is an extremely good actor. I invite you to watch the movie Take Shelter, which he's fantastic in.
Okay, but question. Is he funny in it?
No, he's like a dramatic actor.
Yeah. So is he just not good at, like, is his idea of how to be in a comedy to just kind of look like a sad sack? Is that the idea?
I guess. I don't know. But the various degrees, Michael Shannon is playing it like a drama. Ron Perlman's just being Ron Perlman, right? Mm-hmm. Christina Hendricks is just playing her character as kind of bubbly.
Yes.
Ian McShane is basically Al Swearengen in this. Like, he's doing exactly that character. He's like a grizzled – he's some grizzled guy who lives in the town and makes his own moonshine. Mm-hmm.
I thought he was like a bum at first, like a hobo type of person. But he has like a very nice cabin that we see later in the film. So he's just some weirdo. who lives in the woods and I guess is supposed to be a hunter.
He's like an outdoorsman. Cause
an
later,
outdoorsman.
Later in the movie, he becomes like a pivotal part of the plot to seek out a Bigfoot and capture that Bigfoot. Judy Greer, like, is the only person who kind of injects their performance with like heart and warmth.
Yes. Which, weirdly enough, she's not funny in it. Judy Greer's hilarious. Like, she's an amazing comedic actress.
Yeah.
She's very not funny in this movie.
No, she's just, well, her character is just supposed to be kind of like warm and nice.
Yeah. She's the good girl that craggy-faced human dark side Michael Shannon is going to end up with because Christina Hendricks is a beautiful, horrible person.
But then, about 20 minutes into the movie, Tom Lennon shows up as a character from fucking, like, Dodgeball, from, like, the silliest comedy you can imagine.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you said it, yeah. He's, like, playing a character from Dodgeball.
Like, from a Ben Stiller movie or something. Like, he's the most over-the-top caricature sort of character in what up to this point has been a movie about a quaint town where a weird thing happens.
Uh-huh.
I can only imagine how many drafts this script went through.
There were several pieces of this movie that I was like, 100% I will guarantee you that was ad-libbed by Thomas Lennon. Like,
definitely.
You can tell what's not, and you can tell what is. Okay,
definitely that happened.
Uh-huh.
But also, like, so one of the big questions we had back before we even started was how this ties into It's a Wonderful Life.
Uh-huh.
I would be so sure that early drafts of this script were much more tied into It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes.
Because there's a sense that this town is maybe supposed to be Pottersville from It's a Wonderful Life. The character that Michael Shannon plays, Maynard Grieger,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't take much to change his last name to Gower because he owns a general store in the town. It's a store that sells almost everything you can think of.
It's a store that sells literally everything.
And it has a lunch counter.
It's a restaurant, but it's not a lunch counter, though. It's a restaurant.
Yeah.
Because there's tables. It first seems like a grocery store, and then you notice that there's tables in it. And then in a very, you know, very crucial piece of the plot, he also sells hunting supplies and Halloween costumes.
Well, he just has Halloween costumes. I don't know if he has those for sale. But whatever the case, like, it very much seems like Gower's store from It's a Wonderful Life.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even a mention in the movie that his family has owned this store for generations.
Yes.
So it seems somewhat clear that he's like some distant descendant of Mr. Gower, like four generations away from Mr. Gower from It's a Wonderful Life. But that ended up having to get changed.
The only interesting thing about this movie is that it does legitimately seem like it is the what Aiden called the bizarro world, Bedford Falls. It's Pottersville from It's a Wonderful Life in that alternate universe where George Bailey dies in 2017. Like you nailed it. It legitimately seems like that is what it is, and that's very weird.
But it's not like a wild gambling city.
No, but it is a town. Like, it's a town that's in hard times, right? Like, the mill is closed, which is a big plot point.
Well, it's unmoored in time. It is in an indescribable, indeterminate time period.
Yes.
Because you mentioned it. A mill just closed.
Yeah, the mill just closed, and there are people who are like, yeah, you know, ever since the mill. So it's a recent thing. Like, somebody's like, yeah, can't really afford my groceries since the mill just closed. And Maynard, I honestly swear to God, this isn't a bit. I could not remember his name.
His name is Maynard. You got it.
He's like, oh, it's okay. I'll just write down what you owe me, and you can get me back whenever. That becomes a plot point later. So keep that in mind. But like the mill closing is recent. Maynard runs a general store that services this small town.
And but also, everybody goes there. Everybody from the town shops at this general store.
Oh, all 16 people?
Yeah, that's right.
Everybody goes there. And at one point they watch a news broadcast on a tiny, like, UHF black and white 12-inch TV from, like, maybe the 60s. At one point somebody's watching, like, a broadcast on a little portable, our boy Al Swearengen. I swear to God, this movie has fucked me up so bad, I can't remember his name.
Ian McShane. His character is named Bart.
Yeah. He's watching a broadcast that's on a, like, one of, like, up, literally my grandparents had one, a little portable black and white TV that looks like one of the monitors from WWE.
One of the old monitors. They did finally get HD monitors, but
they did finally get HD monitors. But yes, it looks like one of the old, like one of the, someone called them 20-pound Daewoo monitors.
Yes. Michael Shannon types a letter on a typewriter.
Yeah.
The furniture in their house is all very old looking. But Tom Lennon once again upends everything because yes. He shows up in a fucking helicopter. He's clearly the host of a modern reality / investigation show.
He, charitably, if we're going to give him like a real world analog, he's like a Bear Grylls.
He's sort of like half Bear Grylls, half the host of like any number of ghost shows.
He's sort of half Bear Grylls, half fucking Kraven the Hunter.
Sort of, but like
he's like Ultimate Kraven. Remember how Ultimate Kraven the Hunter was a reality show guy?
Yes. He is kind of like that, but like instead of searching, he's kind of like the host of a ghost show, but instead of searching for ghosts, he searches for monsters.
Cryptids. Yeah.
Like mythical monsters. So he's got like all this high technology, like night vision cameras. And he, like I said, he comes in on a helicopter and he's constantly talking about the network that he works for. And there's a joke about Dancing with the Stars when he's around. Like he pulls the movie into the present day.
Well, we'll get to this, but he also pulls it into about 2009.
Yeah, but so it's more of the present day than the movie had been up to that point.
Yes. Okay, so it's clearly meant to be like a spiritual sequel to It's a Wonderful Life in an earlier draft, I think. I think that's very clear.
Yeah.
But I also, like, it's... like, somebody thought because It's a Wonderful Life was old that it's in the public domain, right? That's what happened. And then everything they could get away with, like, oh, let's do a screwball comedy in the fucked up Bedford Falls. That's gotta be the thing. Because there's no reason for this movie to take place at Christmas.
No. That's another thing we kept saying is, why is this a Christmas movie? Because nothing that happens to it relates to Christmas.
Yeah. And the thing is, Matt, nothing in it relates to Christmas until the last 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
When it is 1,000,000% It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes.
When it becomes clear that they can do an homage and that is legal.
So let's just burn through what actually happens in this movie because it's not much. It's like the thinnest of stories.
Yeah.
So Michael Shannon is at work at his store. He's like helping people buy what they need by saying, I'll just write it down in the book and you can owe me. And Judy Greer is there working with him. He asks her if she can close up and take the money to the bank that night because he wants to get home early to surprise his wife with some flowers and a nice dinner.
Yeah, well, because Ian McShane's character comes in and he's like, Maynard, you gotta live. Don't just work your days away. Be like me, possibly a hobo. And then he gives him a jar, an unlabeled jar of clear liquid that we later find out is moonshine, but that may in fact be like peyote.
Yeah, it could have been fucking cyanide for all we do.
Well, it's the people's reactions to it are not what I would call reactions to alcohol.
Definitely not. Definitely not. So Michael Shannon goes home. He's going to surprise his wife. He walks into the house and he finds there. He surprises them in a bad way because he finds his wife in a rabbit costume. Mm-hmm. And the town sheriff, Sheriff Jack, who's played by Ron Perlman, in a wolf costume. Mm-hmm. And as he's walking up the stairs, he hears fucking, like, sound effects album dog noises.
It's meant to be, like, Ron Perlman howling like a dog. It is 1,000,000% doghowl.mp3.
Yeah. So he discovers this. There's an almost painful scene where Ron Perlman and Christina Hendricks explain to Michael Shannon, who is a blank slate, who knows nothing about anything,
yeah,
what furryism is all about and what being a furry is and how there's like this local club that they're a part of. And they start to kind of say that it's not about sex. But Michael Shannon has a really hard time believing that.
This is the only funny line in this section of the movie is when Ron Perlman goes, yeah, you know, it's a club. And he goes, to dress like a squirrel and have sex with my wife club? Which is a very good bit. Like, that's a funny joke.
Although they try to keep this bit going where Michael Shannon keeps saying that Ron Perlman is dressed like a squirrel when he's very clearly a wolf.
Very clearly. Because these costumes, these are not the costumes that you have seen at conventions. These are like, I mean, you call them mascot costumes.
Yeah, they look like mascots.
But they're not, it's, I figured it out. They're not mascot costumes because they're not quite that style. These are like Easter Bunny rabbit costumes, right? Like you, yeah. if your mall does an Easter Bunny that you can go see like Santa Claus, that's what her costume is like. Everybody else's costume isn't like, because spoiler warning, we will eventually see the whole club of furries, which sounds like the best slash worst Sherlock Holmes book. There's like animals that you do not expect. Like there's a llama at one point, which is kind of surprising. Been to a lot of cons, never seen anybody dressed up as a llama. Like if you were going to do a play, these are the costumes you would get. Like if you were somehow going to do a kindergarten Christmas play, but as adults, these are the costumes you would get. I wish I could make it make more sense than that. I can't. The movie doesn't. Why should I?
Yeah, you've done an admirable job. So Michael Shannon is traumatized by this. He's hurt by this. So he goes back to his store and drinks this moonshine. And this was when this drew the reaction of, has Michael Shannon ever been drunk before? Because he's acting so weird at this point. Because Judy Greer is still at the store. And so he's telling Judy Greer what happened. Mm-hmm. In this very over the top, like not drunk, but inebriated in some fashion sort of way.
It's very weird. It's very, very weird. Cause I can't even remember like how he does it. Cause he's like you took Willem Dafoe out of the oven just a little too early. So he's not quite as dried out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
But he's definitely got the lines. He's definitely got those lines.
Oh, he's got those lines.
He should play Scarface, not like Wesker the ventriloquist, but like Scarface the dummy in a Batman movie. He's got such severe lines. Not trying to be mean to Michael Shannon, but like they're like it's prominent.
His reaction here.
When you edit this, please leave that long pause in where you try to gather your thoughts.
Yeah, because it's such a weird leap that he makes at this point. Mm-hmm. He decides that what he's going to do to get back at his wife and Sheriff Jack, because he gets mad at this point.
It's honestly not clear if he's doing it to get back at them. at this point, or if, because I actually thought it was kind of sweet at this point, because he gets drunk, he's sad and depressed, and he decides, like, okay, if that's what she's into, if that's what she likes, then that's what I'm going to be. So he decides he's going to be a furry.
But then he starts muttering under his breath.
Mm-hmm.
As he, because as it turns out, his general store also has hunting gear.
Mm-hmm.
So he puts on, like, I guess it's like hunting gear that's supposed to make you look like foliage, like a bush.
It's called a ghillie suit.
A ghillie suit. Thank you very much. He actually puts on camouflage first, mm-hmm. and then he puts the ghillie suit on over that. Then he goes into his room, his like back closet, and finds a box of Halloween costumes, pulls out an ape mask or a gorilla mask, puts that on, and that's when he says, oh, I'm a gorilla. I can eat my wife and Sheriff Jack alive. I'm going to eat him alive.
Yeah, she's a bunny. You know what a gorilla would do to a wolf and a bunny? They'd eat him alive.
So it kind of ruins the sweetness of that.
Yeah, well, because then, because I'm like, okay, well, that's a little weird. And then we see, like, he goes on a rampage at this point. He goes out. Well, the next thing we see is him get, like, waking up because he gets blackout drunk.
Yep.
And then the next day he wakes up and everybody's like, oh, shit, there's a Sasquatch in town. We got a bunch of Sasquatch sightings. Which, as Aiden pointed out, there's towns that have Sasquatch sightings. They do not, like, get the instant tourism boost that that this place does. But
well, this town is so fucking boring that it becomes the entire newscast.
Yes.
They're just interviewing everybody they can talk to on the news about seeing this Sasquatch, like, roll around in a yard and drink water from a fountain that's like a fountain, you know, the kid peeing.
As the news is going, he's hearing all this stuff about what the Sasquatch did that triggers his memories, and he's like, oh, I am the Sasquatch. I am the one who did these things. And one of the things he does is he, like, murders a rabbit. Does he kill the rabbit, or does he just chase the rabbit?
Well, there was one point where you said, is he trying to fuck that rabbit?
Well, yes. But, I mean, I think that's a fair question, regardless of what the authorial intent was.
Sure. Sure. All we see him do is chase the rabbit. We don't see any of – it's supposed to be funny. It's not, but he chases a rabbit. Yeah. It's
absolutely not. But it is, like, very much like he's not – he's chasing that rabbit to kill it. And, again, I don't know if we made this clear. Christina Hendricks is his wife, and she was dressed as a bunny rabbit.
Yeah. So after all this hubbub and commotion, he sort of flips out. Michael Shannon's character sort of flips out, and he slips out of his store where people are gathered around to watch TV. He starts walking down the street. These two guys come up to him, and they say, hey, you're just the guy we want to see. So there's all this stuff going on with the Bigfoot, right? You know what the Bigfoot is. People all over the world love the Bigfoot.
People on every continent and in every language love Bigfoot.
They give him, like, a Wikipedia lesson about Bigfoot. And then they ask him if they can sell Bigfoot merchandise at his store. To which he kind of just replies, yeah, whatever. Because
mm-hmm.
right around then, he sees Christina Hendricks walking down the street. And things turn into a real Superman Clark Kent situation.
Yeah, because Christina Hendricks, who insisted that it was not a sex thing when she was, like, rubbing up on scritching, is that what it's called? I was trying to remember while we were watching it. Is scritching where they just kind of, like, scratch up on each other? That's what it is, I think.
Yes, that is what it is. I did you a great service just now by Googling it.
No, I'm not going to do it, Matt. Come on. She's like, I don't know, it's not sexual. I just wanted some excitement in my life, and that's why I'm dressing up as a rabbit and hanging out with the sheriff, who's dressing up as a
wolf,
a squirrel. And as soon and she finds out there's a Bigfoot, she might as well be like, I want to fuck that Bigfoot so fucking bad. Like, she is immediately, like, it is very clear it is a sex thing. It, and oh, yeah. It is very clear that she wants to fuck the missing link.
Because she's walking.
She jacks it to Jack Link's commercials, and that's real.
She's walking down the street, sprung. She is fucking sprung. Walking down the street, big smile on her face.
She has a glow about her.
And Michael Shannon, like, walks up to her, and he's like, we need to talk, I think. And she goes, okay, but not now, because I got to find out about Bigfoot.
I got to find out about Bigfoot, if he has a dick, and if I can suck it. So, that might be the bluest we've ever worked on Movie Fighters. I apologize, but that is basically, like, that is what's happening.
Also, okay, so we talked about how this movie can't determine what time period it's in. It also can't determine what it's rated, because there are parts where Christina Hendricks very clearly wants to fuck Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
There are also parts where, after seeing his wife and the town sheriff rubbing up on each other in animal costumes, Michael Shannon is like, I just saw a bunch of poop and it was poopy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and they say shit later in the movie.
Yeah, it's,
like,
real weird.
Like, it's either they thought, hey, this is going to be a PG family comedy, or it was like, this is going to be like PG or third or R, like, kind of raunchy comedy. And they just slapped all that together. And some scenes are the dirtier thing, and some scenes are the more family-friendly thing. That's the only thing I could figure.
I have no idea. Maybe they were trying for a theatrical release, and then were like, eh, we're just going to put this bad boy on Netflix.
Basically, exactly right here, we get the local... Or I don't guess he's local. He's like a national TV host.
Mm-hmm.
Showing up in his helicopter. So Tom Lennon arrives in the movie and is like a character from an entirely different movie. He's doing like a very over-the-top, silly Australian accent.
It's – okay. Remember when we watched Razorback?
Yeah.
Remember how we got complaints from our Australian listeners who are very kind and generous? This is that, but like way more over the top.
I mean, he has to be doing it bad on purpose.
No, he is doing it bad on purpose, because you said, like, it's so bad that you said, hey, when is it going to be revealed that he's not actually Australian? And then, like we called everything that was going to happen in this movie before it happened in this movie.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean we're that doesn't mean we're geniuses. That just means it's really telegraphed.
No, it's that, yeah, that means that this movie does not make a lot of bold choices. And yes, it will eventually be revealed that Brock is not, in fact, Australian. He's, yeah. Do you want to save that for the end, what we find out about Brock?
Yeah, we'll save that for the end. There is a scene, though, where he, like, drops the accent and he's talking to his manager?
She's
girlfriend,
manager, or maybe the producer of the show, something like that.
She's the only person who knows his deal, and their plan is to like stop this show and go make movies eventually, because the show's one big fraud. But like, one thing we find out is that they show up in these towns looking for things, and then they just create the thing and fake it, make a show, and then leave.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the next half hour of the movie. Basically, Tom Lennon takes over the entire movie and goes out and hunts for Bigfoot in the woods. Michael Shannon, feeling like he has to, I don't know, pay off on being Bigfoot, shows up in the woods in his Bigfoot costume, I guess because he still wants to impress his wife too.
Well, because he's bringing a lot of money into the town, right? Like, that's kind of the thing, is that there's now, like, this guy is showing up from TV, like people are selling, like his store is empty, and then when he wakes up the next day, it's full because there was a news story broadcast to 12-inch black and white televisions that was all about this town, and so now it's getting a bunch of Bigfoot-related tourism, which is when Aiden was like, yeah, there are actual like towns with Sasquatch sightings, and this does not happen.
Michael Shannon puts on the costume again and goes out into the woods and tries to, you know, keep this going. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Tom Lennon and his whole crew are trying to fake it. Because
until they're like, oh, there is a Bigfoot. And that means that because so many people have seen it, they're like, oh, there might actually be a real Bigfoot. So we can go out there and catch it. And then we'll be like even more famous than we could be by faking it.
Well, okay,
I think that's the plot.
Well, so here's what happens. Okay, so Michael Shannon shows up. He makes noise and like rustles in the trees and stuff and shows up as actually in his costume. And he chases everybody from the show away. This is also the part of the movie where we see Brock Masterson yell at one of the members of his crew. And it's exactly the rant that Christian Bale made 8 years ago.
Yeah, that shit happened in 2009, and it is word for word. And that was the part where I was like, okay, this is definitely not ad-libbed by Tom Lennon.
Like, that part was very clearly in the script.
Because honestly, a lot of Tom Lennon's lines, like right after he shows up, a lot of the bits that he does as Brock Masterson are genuinely pretty funny. Like, they're not as good as literally anything else he's done. Like, I'm not saying, like, this is the state quality, but it's good. And then there are a bunch of bits in a row that are, like, movie parody bits. Like, it weirdly turns into fucking Scary Movie for a minute.
Yeah.
Because there's that bit. There's a bit where Ian McShane does the whole Quint speech from Jaws, like he scratches on the chalkboard and he's like, you know, like, y'all know who I am and what I can do, blah 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 blah, blah. Like it's the whole scene. They do like one or two more of those, I think.
Well, there's also a part, and this may have been somewhat ad-libbed by Tom Lennon, but there's also a part where he plays a guitar and sings a song about
that. Part is pretty funny.
The town having the Sasquatch. Yeah, it's pretty funny. So maybe it is something he helped create, but it's also like a very goofy comedy kind of thing in the middle of this movie that is not exactly a goofy comedy.
Yeah.
The thing where Ian McShane gives the quit
speech, can't decide if it wants to be a goofy comedy or not.
Yeah. So the thing where Ian McShane gives the quit speech, that sets in motion this thing where he actually goes out into the woods with Tom Lennon and the sheriff to try to for real find the Sasquatch. Because Ian McShane says, look, this town could just have one TV show, like one 30-minute TV show that goes on air one time, and that gets forgotten. Or we could catch the Sasquatch and be immortal. So what are you going to do? And he talks everybody into having him, the reality show host, and the sheriff go out into the woods, live in a tent, and try to find the Sasquatch. Now, they're out there for a few days. They're out there for a couple days, and Michael Shannon's not going because he feels – there's a sense that he's like feeling like being the Sasquatch – doing the Sasquatch stuff has actually like been a bad idea. And he shouldn't be.
Well, I mean, it's – he shouldn't be. There's no real reason presented why he keeps on being a Sasquatch.
No, other than like maybe he thinks it's helping the town and he thinks that he's impressing his wife.
Yeah. I don't know.
There's also a thing in here where Judy Greer finds the costume and starts acting real weird around him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because she knows he's the Sasquatch. So that's like, there's such a weird, like, were you prepared for this movie to have a mystery of who's the Sasquatch?
So after like several days and a scene where Tom Lennon calls his producer slash manager slash girlfriend from the woods while he's pooping, because there's a funny joke about how there's no bathroom, so he has to poop in the woods, and his producer like gets on his case for telling her about that, and then she's like, "How are you going to wipe?" And he's like, "I didn't think about it."
He's right like, then, "Oh no!"
Yeah, right then Ian McShane like shows up behind him and like claps behind his head, and Tom Lennon like pulls up his pants real fast, and they have a conversation. And I think Aiden observed that they're having conversation right by a really fresh turd.
Like a fresh pile of human shit.
Yeah.
Just all out there.
That particular night, because there's another thing where Brock accidentally tranquilizes the sheriff. But the sheriff, you know, comes to, they drink moonshine that night. Once again, they're acting inebriated, but not exactly what you recognize as drunk.
Yeah, like very weird.
Except everybody except Ian McShane, who's not drunk. There's a sense that Ian McShane has like a tolerance that's so high to this alcohol that it does nothing to him. So Michael Shannon finally shows up in the Sasquatch costume because he finds out basically about this stakeout that's where they're looking for him. And he gets tranquilized by Ian McShane because they have tranquilizer guns. He gets shot. He goes down. They put him in the back of a truck. They drive him into the middle of town, and they're like, we got him. We got Sasquatch.
Yeah. Keep in mind, he's wearing some real tree and a store-bought gorilla mask.
Yeah.
Like, and Thomas Lennon's like, yeah, this is the real for real Sasquatch.
I mean, I could even believe that it would fool Tom Lennon. Character because he's supposed to be a buffoon. Yeah. But Ian McShane is there and he's like a master outdoorsman. And yeah. He even thinks yeah. This is a real Sasquatch.
Well, does he?
Oh,
because there's
yeah. Like only Judy Greer like runs up and says, like, this is obviously not a real Bigfoot, you idiots. This is a well, man a in bit, a costume.
There's a bit where Ian McShane sees him. And he kind of has this look on his face like, oh, you've done it now. You've done it now, Maynard. Now we've got no choice but to bring you in and tell everybody you were the Squatch.
I guess you could read that into it. I feel like that was not in the text of the movie at all.
I mean, maybe look, that might have just been a choice that Ian McShane made to try and liven things up. Oh, because it probably goes without saying – I feel like nobody got a second take in this movie if they did not literally forget a line.
That's probably fair and true, because Michael Shannon is definitely a better actor than he comes off being in this. And so are, like, Ian McShane holds his own pretty well. Ron Perlman has pretty flat line readings. Like, everybody could be doing better, given the cast
everybody
that's
could
in this
be
movie.
Doing better. Tom Lennon's pretty good, but it's clear like what he is like. The gulf is so big between his funniest lines and his least funny lines that it is very clear like what he's ad-libbing and what he's not.
Yeah, because Tom Lennon is a funny person who like will just be naturally funny, right? Like
he wrote Night at the Museum, so
he sure did. He was Lieutenant Dangle for crying out loud. So
my favorite – what's your favorite Reno 911 joke?
Oh, God. It's got to be that restaurant's called Tacos, 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 Tacos.
My favorite bit from Reno 911 is the one where Tom Lennon and Carrie Kenney are driving down the street. And Carrie Kenney – this is before Carrie Kenney got like – shoot pregnant too but she says something about how she collects baby clothes, and Tom Lennon just turns in the driver's seat of the car and goes, "You collect baby clothes?" and stares at her, and then the car crashes.
Every time they crash the police cars. Ah.
Yeah, very good.
Beautiful. Anyway.
So, yeah, they got a Squatch.
Yeah, notice how we decided to just start talking about Reno 911 instead of this movie.
Yeah, notice how I remember Reno 911, a show that I have not watched for maybe like 6 or 7 years, but I forgot we had to talk about this show and brushed my teeth and went to bed.
So Judy Greer takes off the mask. It is revealed to be Maynard. And Tom Lennon explodes. He says, "You guys are frauds. you tricked me. You tried to fool me into coming here. You just wanted the fame and attention that I could bring. I'm going to sue this town. I'm going to sue everybody in it for $150 million.
This led us to a crucial discussion about whether it was possible to sue a town. And it is possible to sue a town. It is not possible to sue a town for a man faking a Sasquatch.
Yeah. There's no way that, like, a guy was running around in a Sasquatch costume and a TV show came to film it is something that you could win a lawsuit about. Like, at worst, you could claim fraud. And fraud is a criminal offense. Anyway, I don't see how that lawsuit could work out, but I'm not an attorney, and I don't claim to be one.
I do trust you with all of my legal affairs, but that's really on me at this point.
Yeah, you definitely shouldn't. So he leaves town. He's suing. Everybody in the town is mad at Michael Shannon. They hate
him
now. And
I don't really get why everybody's mad at him. Because everybody's like, he's this beloved guy in this town, and everybody's immediately like, fuck you for dressing up like a Sasquatch.
Yeah. And he's just kind of like, I'm sorry. He's like at his store, nobody's coming. He's like, despite people are telling him off in the street. Until finally, Judy Greer has to assemble the entire town into a room and say, look, Maynard is a great guy. He only dressed up as the Sasquatch to help the town, which is actually a lie. he dressed up as a Sasquatch to make his
wife
horny.
Wants to fuck a Sasquatch.
Yeah. But, like, she tells the entire town, like, look, forgive him. He, you know the book that he keeps saying that he's writing down your charges in and yeah. He's going to charge you later?
Here's the ledger. You all know what this is. Everybody in town's been in this ledger at one point because everybody in town has not had the money for groceries at some point, and Maynard has put you in the ledger and told you could get him back. Well, look at this shit.
She opens the ledger and it's blank. He hasn't been writing down anybody's name. He's just giving the people their groceries.
Yeah. Before we get into what's bad about it, that's kind of a nice moment. That's kind of a nice reveal about Maynard. It comes at the wrong time, but yeah, I think it is kind of a nice reveal.
It should have come much earlier in the movie.
Much earlier in the film.
So you could like him.
Yes. So that he had a character trait.
Yeah. Instead of just being a blank face who puts on a weird costume. So he, because of that, everybody shows up at Maynard's store, and we get It's a Wonderful Life ending. They, like, come through one by one. They tell him, Maynard, you're actually great. We're sorry that we told you suck for being dressing up like Bigfoot. Here's $1 bill. And they all put single dollar bills down on the counter.
Everybody forms a single file line, and they all apologize, which admittedly is the fucking dream.
Sure. Sure.
Okay. It's a Wonderful Life. When George Bailey comes back, Donna Reed's like, hey, don't worry about it. We're gonna make this work. And George is like, yeah, I know. We'll figure it out somehow. And then the doorbell rings, and then it's everybody in Bedford Falls of their own volition.
Right. Nobody had to nobody had to put them in a room and give them a pep talk.
Yeah. It's everybody going, hey, here's the point of this movie. George thought he was unloved, but he's not. He's actually the most beloved person in town. And yeah, Mr. Potter got away with the money, but that's okay because we're all coming together. Fuck Mr. Potter. He can have that money because, George, you can have this money. Like, that's what It's a Wonderful Life's ending is, and that's why that movie is enduring, right? Yeah, because here's to George Bailey, the richest man in town.
Yeah, because George Bailey, we saw through the whole movie how George Bailey earned that love and respect. Like, how he kept putting off good things or the things he wanted to do in his life for the sake of other people. Mm-hmm. That's It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, and here's – look – it's real hard to sympathize with Maynard because Maynard is married to Christina Hendricks, which I think a lot of people would see as an enviable position to be in. And, like, she tells him that she, like, started getting into being a furry and hanging out with the sheriff because he's, like, always working.
And because she's bored. Like, her whole thing is she's bored.
And so it's, like, he loses his wife because he's so focused on this, what is honestly a failing business. And it's not that he's sacrificing his happiness for others. It's that he's just, you know, ignoring his wife is how it comes off.
Yeah, and, like, she's a little, I don't know, picky, flippant, finicky.
She's a little bit of a creep.
Well, I don't know if creep's even the word. Like, she's flighty, maybe is the word. But she's
flighty
not
flighty is probably the word.
She's not a bad person that we can see. She maybe just gets bored easily. But after everybody comes through and gives him money, and again, he hasn't done anything that's selfless. He initially dressed up as Bigfoot for entirely selfish reasons. Well,
to apparently go murder his wife.
Yeah. However, when she shows up and she's like, hey, could just come back home, everything will be good, and you can wear the Bigfoot costume, and we'll be good.
Because I can tell now that you're also into being a Bigfoot.
Even with that, good news,
I've been looking for Bigfoot for quite some time.
Yeah. Even with that, he's like, nah, we should break up.
He's like, yeah, you were right. We should break up.
Christina Hendricks walks out of the store, and immediately Michael Shannon turns to Judy Greer, and he's like, hey, do you want to hang out?
Who's his employee?
Who's his employee? I mean, she had offered for them to hang out earlier in the movie to, like, go eat some popcorn or something. But, like, it's seconds after his wife leaves the store.
Yeah, you know what else doesn't happen in It's a Wonderful Life? Jimmy Stewart doesn't leave Donna Reed at the end.
Yeah. He doesn't say, like, oh, you jilted me, so get out of here, and I'm gonna go out with this girl now.
Hey, you know what? How about fuck the moon? How about that?
Yeah.
How about you and the moon can go be very happy together by yourselves?
Buffalo gal, won't you stay in tonight? So
wait, there's a buffalo gal? Don't tell Christina Hendricks.
Then there's like an epilogue to the movie. Two epilogues, really. There's an epilogue about how Brock Masterson is revealed as a fraud because he's some New York Jew.
Yeah. And look, okay. That's not us saying it. It's revealed that his name is like Adam Abramovitz or something from Long Island.
He's from Queens.
Whether they intended to just be like, oh, the furthest, you know, name from Brock Masterson.
The furthest name that you would think would be like an Australian guy's name, maybe.
Yeah.
But
it's absolutely like, oh, like look at this Jew. It's like really bad.
This fraudulent New York Jew.
Yeah.
Who wanted to sue the town. All he cared about was money.
It's real bad.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah, it's not what you would call good, for sure.
Then there's another epilogue where Judy Greer and Michael Shannon get a loan from a bank, and we see them at the loan office multiple times. They get a loan from the bank, they buy the old mill, and make it into a Bigfoot museum.
Mm-hmm.
The end. Chris, what have you got for high points of Pottersville?
Like I said, a lot of Tom Lennon's stuff is pretty funny. Like, the bit where he sings the little song, I was like, I can't believe this is a shot-for-shot remake of The Life Aquatic.
The bit where he sings the little song is funny. He does some funny stuff with the accent, where he just goes, like, way over the top with it.
Yeah.
There's some funny... There's some parts where he's, like... just doing, like, weird shit to impress people. So all of that is tempered by the bad parts where he's, like, doing the Christian Bale rant or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, like, the stuff that's clearly just Thomas Lennon riffing is funny.
About 20, like, a good 20 minutes after he first shows up, you think, okay, well, this, you know, here's the saving grace of this movie. And then you are proven wrong.
Yeah.
But for a while there, he really keeps it going.
Also, I will have to say, kudos to both Ian McShane and Judy Greer for being much better than this movie deserves.
I have something to say about Judy Greer and the low points, but I do want to point out that it is not in any way her fault.
Yeah, like, I feel like she cries. She actually cries.
She sheds a for real tear. She goes into the method for this movie.
Yeah. Because there's a part where like, Michael Shannon writes a letter on a typewriter.
Inexplicable.
Basically saying, like, hey, I'm going to go die as Sasquatch and let them capture me to save the town. Like, obviously, that doesn't make any fucking sense because they'd take off the mask and see that it was a person.
Yep.
But that's what the letter says. And she cries.
She does. She sheds a tear.
And, like, Ian McShane, like, brings more gravity to his role than really is it deserves at all.
Yeah, not only more gravity than it deserves, more than is warranted by far.
Yeah. Anything else?
No.
The lighting is okay?
It's – the lighting's okay, but it's also shot like a
– like a TV movie.
Commercial, you know? It's shot like a TV movie.
It feels like a TV movie.
Yeah.
All right, roll them out, the low points of Pottersville.
Tom Lennon, the money-grubbing Jew, is pretty bad.
Pretty bad.
I think we've trashed this one quite a bit at this point, so you probably got a good idea. Something that I find is inexplicable and kind of unforgivable in this movie, Judy Greer doesn't tell a single joke. Judy Greer, like, legitimately one of the funniest actresses around, does not have any comedy to her part at all.
Yeah.
She's, like, if you watch this movie, you would have no idea that Judy Greer was funny at all. She's literally just like she's a pretty face. She's literally just a pretty face in this movie.
Well, one thing that we observed is that there are a number of extremely close close-ups on Judy Greer.
Yeah. It's weird because, like, there's a couple in other places too, but every shot of Judy Greer, every shot where she's talking, every shot of her where she's, like, the only one in frame, is shot from about a foot away from her face, like, with the camera about a foot away from her eyes. And it's weird. And, I mean, you know, she's a very beautiful woman, but it's very weird to have, like, that close up. And like, it's a kind of not to be a creep, it's kind of especially weird because this movie kind of goes out of its way to not have Christina Hendricks do anything sexy.
Yeah, it puts Christina Hendricks in, like, a big costume that covers up her whole body and her face.
I'm not saying that's Christina Hendricks' only value as an actress, but, you know, she's, as you know, if you're listening to this, she's very well known for, like, her hourglass figure. This movie hires Christina Hendricks to be in a mascot costume and Judy Greer to not do anything funny, which is very weird.
I mean, it's also a movie ostensibly that's kind of about It's a Wonderful Life. It has a bunch of Christmas shit on the cover, the DVD cover of the movie. Tom Lennon is wearing a Santa hat on it, which is grossly misrepresentative of his part in the movie. Like, in fact, he's wearing clothes that he never wears in the movie on the DVD cover. It's a quote-unquote Christmas movie without a single fucking thing about Christmas in it.
Not a scrap. Like, it just happens to take place at the holidays, sort of. And because it's almost an It's a Wonderful Life riff.
Of note, it's the cover also says It's a Magical Life. It's like a tagline.
Oh, boy.
Like, they're really playing into, like, saying, like, this is kind of related to It's a Wonderful Life. but it's really not.
I swear to God, somebody thought it was public domain and then found out it wasn't at the last minute.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, the lead character is unlikable.
Yeah, he's very unlikable, and because like Michael Shannon does not display any emotion, like he's not written as likable, but he's also not performed as likable.
He's just a blank slate. He's just a blank slate through this whole thing.
In the same way that you would never know that Judy Greer is funny from this movie, you would also never know that Michael Shannon was a good actor.
Yeah.
Because he, like, his performance is so, you know, at the end of it, Aiden made the comment, like, hey, has he opened his mouth in this movie? Because it's all just, like, it's like Joel Kinnaman-level mumbling.
Like, everybody but Ian McShane and Tom Lennon are kind of wasted, including, yeah. Like, Ron Perlman, too.
Ron Perlman's a non-factor.
It's weird. Like, it's so, like, so many of the choices in this movie are weird, including another thing I wanted to bring up as another low point, the score / soundtrack.
Oh, it's terrible.
Which isn't even Christmassy music. It's like stock music.
It's absolutely stock music.
It's stock, funny, goofy comedy music. There's one part where Michael Shannon is walking out of his store out onto the sidewalk, and there's this like kind of like xylophone music playing. And you were like, what is that? Like, what is this music? And I was like, that's a skeleton playing his own bones.
Yep. You got it. You got it, Matt. You like, called that one.
It's not even Christmassy.
It's not. It's so weird.
Every choice in this movie is weird.
All right. Final thoughts. We get into it.
Yeah. Don't watch this movie.
Do not watch this movie. A couple things. The Vulture review of this movie said that it is unique because it is a movie that is impossible for anyone to like. That's an incredible and very accurate description of this movie. It's not like so bad it's good. It's not in any way enjoyable. It's not in any way memorable, really. It's just bad. It is just like forgettable. Again, I'm not kidding. I was in bed. I was like, did I have to do something today? No, I don't think so. I wrote a little bit, so I'm good. I'm good for the weekend. No, I had to come do the show.
Well, here's the thing. Even tangentially connecting this movie to It's a Wonderful Life was absolutely and completely setting it up for failure.
Oh, huge mistake.
Like, because all you're going to do is compare it to a timeless movie that it will never be better than.
That's like if The Room was called Star Wars.
But, like, this isn't even enjoyably bad like The Room is.
No.
It's just,
in no respect.
It's just flat. It's just a flat turd.
It's a flat turd sitting next to Tom Lennon and Ian McShane.
You read another review that was saying, like, you know, there are movies that are so good they're bad. There are movies that are so bad they're boring. And Pottersville, like, occupies its own space.
Yeah. It's not even in that strata. And here's my question for you, Matt. This is what I want to get into. This might be a longer discussion than we usually do on final thoughts. So if you're prepared.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, I'm ready.
Do you think the person in this movie, the person who made this movie, just found out about furries? Because it's very much, to me, it feels like a movie that is very much, I just found out about furries, and I am living some blessed life where it's the weirdest thing I've ever heard of on the internet. But I also feel like, in the way that we watched a movie that seems to know zero things about pro wrestling, that had actual wrestler John Hennigan in it, maybe this movie was made by someone who's definitely a furry and was trying to like make the furry Christmas movie and just is bad?
Maybe. My theory is that this movie was pieced together over a period of at least a decade. And the furry stuff got added in maybe 2012.
Okay.
Or maybe 2009. Like, I don't know. Like, the Christian Bale stuff was clearly added in when that was still relevant, right? It seems like every few years a few pages got added to this script or pages got changed somehow. And that's how it's this weird mix of, like, nothing current and nothing old at the same time.
Yeah, it's I feel like I would come down on the side of someone found out about furries in 2009 and they thought it was weird. And so they, like, incorporated it into a movie as, like, look at this weird thing that people do. It's inherently hilarious.
Yeah. I don't
know. Meanwhile, we're over here and we live on the internet. You can't show us nothing anymore.
I want to close out with one detail, because we talked about how we kind of called a lot of stuff in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, Chris, when you talked about this movie being part of some kind of tax evasion scheme?
Yes.
Citing IndieWire. This film was produced in conjunction with Utica's SUNY Polytechnic Institute as part of a state tax scheme to build an upstate hub for film production.
There you go. Yeah, because that's the only way that's the only way this cast gets in this movie, right?
Yeah.
As if they can knock it out in a weekend and get some tax-free money.
Yeah. What a disaster this movie was.
Yeah, not good. Quite bad, in fact.
Which means that when we come back in January with another Movie Fighters, maybe we'll do a palate cleanser.
Maybe, like, I would like to start the year off right.
Maybe we'll do a good one.
We deserve it. We owe it to ourselves to start 2018 off in a little bit of a better state than we started 2017.
If you would like to get in touch with us or make a suggestion of a movie, you can email us at moviefighterscast@gmail.com. We also have our Tumblr, moviefighterscast.tumblr.com. You can get in touch with us both of those places. Our website was designed by Sean Bogus. Our theme music is by Michael Kill. The snack situation theme is by Matt Fisher. We'll be back sometime in December with a snack situation special. And there's plenty more War Rocket Ajax in December, so we're not going anywhere, but we'll definitely be back with another Movie Fighters in January.
It is December. If the spirit moves you, you can find my Amazon wish list at the-isb.com. It's way down at the bottom. Don't feel obligated, but it's there if you want it. And while you're at Amazon, buy a copy of Matt's book, Supreme Villainy. It's extremely good. I have loved it. It makes a great gift for anyone who likes superheroes or comedy or any combination of the two.
Well, thank you very much for that, Chris. See you guys next month. Thanks for listening. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Happy holidays.
This has been a Clytus Media production.